Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Oh, here we go on a Thursday. I think we're going to have our best show of the week. This is The Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening. Live in LA on iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1. An hour from now, Greg Cosell, our NFL meat sandwich. He breaks down stuff. If you're a fantasy football player, if you're a gambler, or if you just like football, nobody lays it out like Greg Cosell. Urban Meyer in a couple of hours. Jeff Schwartz is live in studio, former NFL offensive lineman. His brother Mitchell Schwartz, of course, is a great offensive lineman for Kansas City. And Joy Taylor is joining me. Joy, how are you?
I'm great. Can't wait for tonight's game.
Yes, tonight the Rams, Seahawks. To me, it's a coin flip. So this summer I sent my daughter to Cape Town, South Africa for about a month and a half. It was a leadership thing. And her mother and I decided let's let her see part of the world, go by herself and a handful of other college kids. And there was a moment that was utterly fascinating to me. She's going to bed, and she calls me on FaceTime, and I am literally in the back part of my house. And she's on FaceTime, and my daughter's calling me. She's in South Africa in a tiny room. Doors are locked. I'm in Manhattan Beach, California. I was looking for a broom or something. I'm in a little storage area. And I am talking to my daughter in real time, less than a 1 second delay. She's in South Africa. And I'm thinking, that is crazy. We have figured out how to do that. We have figured out as a country how to send people into spaceships and to be on other planets. Just think about that. But here's what we haven't done in 8 years. Figured out how to stop Russell Wilson. 8 years, no losing seasons in now the toughest division, best coach division in football. So tonight the Seahawks and the Rams play. Rams have more good players. Rams should win the game. And it's funny about the NFC West because it's had star-studded coaches. San Francisco owned it for 3 years with Jim Harbaugh. And then Seattle owned it for 4 years with Pete Carroll. And then here came Sean McVay, and he's danced on everybody else's grave for a couple of years in Los Angeles. And everybody now, the media just fell in love with Sean McVay. The cheekbones, the charisma, he won. He's very verbal. He's very smart. He's very handsome. He is like the ultimate L.A. millionaire, right? He's got it all, baby. The career, the looks. And everybody fell head over heels. The Rams are going to spend big money and dominate. And you know why I never believed it? Two reasons. Number one, the coaching in this division is the best in football. Pete Carroll is arguably, along with Belichick, the first or second best defensive mind in the last 10 years in the league. Kyle Shanahan, along with Andy Reid and Sean Payton, is one of the top three offensive coaches. And there's no question Sean McVay is the best young coach overall in the game. I don't know what's happening in Arizona, but those three alone, the coaching is way too good for any one coach to run away with this division. Three of the top five, six coaches in football are in the same division. Nobody's dominating it. But the second reason nobody's dominating it is Russell Wilson. I want you to think about this for a second. Russell Wilson lost his best receiver. He retired. The offensive line is so-so. His top running back was picked in the seventh round. He has a rookie wide receiver who dropped in the draft and a blocking tight end. And right now, he is neck and neck with Patrick Mahomes as the best quarterback statistically in the NFL. It makes absolutely no sense. Either does somebody on YouTube who I watched yesterday figure out the Rubik's Cube in 28 seconds, men on the moon, or me talking to my daughter in South Africa on a phone. Russell Wilson is unbelievable. The only team that could ever own this division, own it, would be Seattle, and that's because of Russell Wilson. It's really unbelievable what he's done this year. He's having his best season as he lost his best receiver, his best running back's a seventh rounder. The offensive line is not ranked as a top 10 line. They're kind of rebuilding, to be honest with you, on the O-line and defense. And Peter King was on our show this week. I said, Peter, I don't know if he's the best player. He's certainly the best Seahawk ever. I said, but he is absolutely in my lifetime. He's the best running quarterback in 30 years. He has the best touchdown ratio, meaning the percentage of passes that become touchdowns. He has the best ratio in 50 years. Think about that. The highest percentage of passes that become touchdowns. And the Peter King, I said, Peter, he's the most underrated player of my life. I'm not even sure who's second. Maybe Steve Young.
We look at Russell Wilson, who is a quarterback metronome. He never misses any time. He never gets hurt. He's never banged up. Well, I'm sure he is. But he never, ever flinches. It's hard to say if you think a guy is going to the Hall of Fame one day that he's underrated. But if it's possible with any quarterback in football right now, it's Russell Wilson.
Tonight, Rams have better players. Rams have far more. They have an elite offensive lineman. Rams have a better receiving core. Rams have the best defensive lineman. Rams have better special teams. Rams should win. If they don't, it's because of Russell Wilson. Let me shift to this. I have a theory, and I think Joy and I talked about that this week. I would only pay athletes I had to pay, and I would only pay them when I have to pay them. I believe you win, and athletes want to win. I've seen it in the NBA for years. Players want to be relevant. Players give up money. Chris Bosh, LeBron, D. Wade, Anthony Davis, Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, they all give up money because players want to be relevant. So this is a fascinating story. Stephon Diggs is a wide receiver for Minnesota. Oh, he's good. He's really, really good. And he hasn't shown up for practice because his quarterback stinks, Kirk Cousins. Yesterday, the coach said, Mike Zimmer, I don't know where he's at. But it was interesting because he's been sending cryptic messages on Instagram and is now following a bunch of New England Patriots on Instagram. Isn't that interesting? I hear all the time, you got to pay this player to get him. Players want money. Got to pay the man. And I'm like, I want you to think about this. Antonio Brown, who did he want to play for? The Patriots. OBJ in the summer, who did he want to play for? The Patriots. Stephon Diggs, yesterday on Instagram, who did he want to play for? New England doesn't pay anybody. The weather stinks. Not even Tom Brady's allowed to be a star. They have the hardest practices in the league, the most demanding coach, and a quarterback that if you don't memorize the playbook, will ghost you. OBJ, AB, Stephon Diggs. I want to play with that team. You don't have to play stars. You have to win. Players want to win. NBA players want to win. LeBron, KD, Wade, Bosh, they want to be relevant. They want to be on TV in May and June. Their agents want them to be. Their shoe companies want them to be. Folks, once you got a net worth of $75 million, the money you make on interest is seven figures. You want to be in the game. You want to be invited to the party. You want to get shoe deals in China. You don't get that when you're watching the playoffs at home in Indiana. And all these so-called diva wide receivers, got to pay them. No, you don't. DeSean Jackson, I want to play for Philadelphia. OBJ, AB, and now Stephon Diggs. They could play anywhere. Oh, Stephon Diggs is absurd. He just, you know where he doesn't want to play? With Kirk Cousins. That's where he don't want to play. So once again, this is why I said, the Rams took a big risk. We're going to pay everybody. New England's like, we're not going to pay anybody. We're just going to win. By the way, Michael Bennett, very Mr. Free Expression, Mr. Independent Thinker, Mr. Political Talk Guy, Michael Bennett, what? I want to be a Patriot. Jamie Collins was a linebacker for New England. They wouldn't pay him. Went to Cleveland, made big money. Could have made more money on the market. He's now making a nickel. Went back to New England. You don't have to pay players. I mean, you have to pay occasional players on the market, like a LeBron. I get it. James Harden, Steph Curry, guys on the market. But the truth is, athletes want to be relevant. Athletes want to win. Athletes want to, like us, just be the best version of ourselves. Stephon Diggs might as well be a prank phone call. He's anonymous now in Minnesota. He just wants to catch the ball, be great, have fun. OBJ keeps showing us his watch. You know what OBJ really wants? A ring. That's what he really wants. It's what they all want. Rings. Relevance. Once again, a star wide receiver wants to go to New England in crappy weather, no stars, we're not paying you, keep quiet, play football, be part of an awesome huddle, memorize the playbook, and our coach barks at you. Where can I sign up? And for the record, I got no problem with players getting paid who are stars, but isn't sports better when players care about winning as much as we do? And I think overwhelmingly, 99.9%, even the stars, do. And that's a cool thing.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Cowboy fans, turn away. This could be punitive. This is going to be very difficult. You know I like Dak. You know I like Dak, and I think he's a franchise quarterback. I think there's a real low ceiling, but that's okay. Not everybody is Carson Wentz and Patrick Mahomes. I think a lot of guys who I see as Matt Ryan's a franchise quarterback. I think the ceiling's lower. I'm okay with that. Very interesting. There was an article in the USA Today from a writer, C. Joseph Wright. And that sounds a little, doesn't it? C. Joseph Wright. C. Joseph Run. C. Joseph Wright. So it's interesting. So he takes his notebooks covering the Cowboys. And he starts noticing something with Dak Prescott. We thought Scott Linehan is too conservative as a play caller, so they fire him. We think now, last week, we're like, you know, Kellen Moore is too conservative and predictable. Are they, or are they realizing there's things Dak just can't do, and so they call plays to help him? In the 44 games where this writer had notes on the Cowboys, he started detecting a trend that they rarely asked Dak when he was under center to drop back and pass. That the Cowboys, when Dak's under center, they almost always run, almost always. And when Dak's out of the shotgun, they almost always pass. We both know predictability is a very bad thing in the NFL. So I went back and I said, let's not count Dak's rookie season. I don't count anybody's rookie season. Patrick Mahomes didn't play. I don't think you can count. I mean, it was nice for Lamar last year, but he's clearly better this year. So let's just take Dak's rookie year out. Let's not judge him on that. Let's go to 2017, to 2018, and this year. Now, this is with the best offensive line in football. This is mostly, overwhelmingly, with the best running back in football. You start to see, let's go to 17, the bad games. It's not just that they lose. They lose awfully to good defenses. So they get crushed by Denver, can't move the ball. Denver had the third best defense. Then they face Atlanta, the ninth best defense, can't move the ball. They lose by 20. They lose by 30 to the Eagles, who had the fourth best defense. They lose to the Chargers 28-6 and the Seahawks. And again, they can't move the ball. The following year, they open up with Carolina. Can't move the ball. The Panthers defense at that time was ranked 15th overall at the end of the year, but they were healthy in week one. They didn't have injuries. They then could not move the ball against Seattle, the Texans, the Titans, and were shut out 23-0 by the Colts. This year, they've played one elite defense in terms of personnel. Forget rankings now. It's early. They couldn't move the ball against the Saints, with the best offensive line, with mostly the best running back. Dallas doesn't just lose. They lose the same way. When you ask Dak to score in shootouts, he can't. Dak is 31-2 when he scores 20 points, telling you Dallas' defense is pretty good. Carson Wentz has already lost two games this year when he scored over 20. You see a trend with Dak is that Dak has to win a certain way. If he faces healthy, elite defenses, it gets ugly fast. When he faces defense that are in top 10 or top defensive coaches, he can't move the ball consistently. Now, this doesn't mean Dak's not a franchise quarterback. But what it means is there is a formula for Dak. With the best offensive line and with Zeke, he has more ugly offensive games than any quarterback we consider to be in that $30 million range. Go back to 2017, 2018 in the Saints game. It's not great. It does give you pause. This is with the best O-line. This is with Zeke and a good defense. So what it tells you is Wentz and Mahomes, defense doesn't show up, they can win. Aaron Rodgers, defense doesn't show up, they can win. Russell Wilson, defense, Deshaun Watson. This is the difference between fantastic quarterback talents and winning quarterbacks. But clearly, if you dig deeper, there is a concern when they face top defensive personnel or top coaches. There have been a dozen absolute clunkers, almost all against top 10 defenses or healthy top defenses early in seasons. Again, I like Dak. Not anti-Dak. But, you know, this guy's notebook's got all these little things in it, and pretty soon you start digging it. It's like, by the way, Goulet, how'd that land for you?
I mean, unfortunately, I watched every snap of all of those games, so this is not a total surprise to me.
Goulet, as we did this morning, was moving in his chair. He was restless.
It's what you didn't need to bring it up. You know, you could have just left me alone.
Yeah.
You don't have to remind me of this.
Because in our morning meeting, I have been very pro-Dak for 3 years, and Goulet just rolls his eyes. He doesn't want to hear it. And this morning, he heard it. And he didn't like what he heard.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
We blame the wrong people all the time. I talk about this. We always want to blame the wrong people. And so Jared Goff is getting crushed. Jared Goff's no good. Nick Wright yesterday. He's a bum. He's terrible. Pro Football Focus. Do you see how bad the Bengals offensive line was against the Steelers on Monday night? It's terrible. Through four games, the Rams have graded worse than Cincinnati. Every game, offensive line. So now Jared Goff now has the lowest rated offensive line and no running game. Now Jacksonville doesn't have a great offensive line, but Leonard Fournette's a star back. And Carolina doesn't have a great offensive line, but Christian McCaffrey's a beast. And Cleveland doesn't have a good offensive line, but Nick Chubb's a monster. And the Vikings don't have a good offensive line, but Dalvin Cook is fantastic. Jared Goff has a bad offensive line. The guards are among the lowest pass-blocking guards in the NFL. And, oh, wait, now Todd Gurley isn't dynamic. So it's not a Jared Goff issue. You saw him with Patrick Mahomes. Okay, yes, of course. Just when Kareem Hunt got hurt, Patrick Mahomes went through four or five games and his numbers dipped. If you took Travis Kelce away from Patrick Mahomes for 4 to 5 to 6 to 7 games, his numbers would dip. So we've got this belief now that Jared Goff is no good. Their line last year was one of the best run-blocking lines in the NFL. It's now rated last. That's the problem. It's not a Jared Goff issue. And I'm not a Jared Goff apologist. I like Jared Goff. But you got it. These young quarterbacks... Rams, Whitworth now is 38, showing his age on the left tackle spot. So we'll get to that with Greg Cosell. 40 years, NFL films. Love bringing him on. We brought him on this summer, by the way. We've had him on every week since August, and we'll have him on through February. So, Greg, it's a pleasure to have you. Let's talk about Cleveland. I'm a big believer in that to get duplicated success, that means – to have something that can work week after week after week, you in any business, you have to be able to depend on things. And in Cleveland, Nick Chubb and that defensive front, Jarvis Landry, possession receiver, I felt like last week Cleveland found a formula that you could duplicate, that you could take on the road. What did you make of their offensive output?
Well, I think much of the output, the big output, resulted from assignment mistakes by the Ravens. But to get to your larger point, I think every good offense has a sense of an identity and how they want to play, and then you sort of tweak based on your opponent. But I guess what you're saying is, and I think it's fair at this point, should their offense start with Nick Chubb?
Yes.
And have him be the foundation as opposed to Baker Mayfield in the gun and working the pass game. And I think at this point that's probably a fair way to go. It gives you more of a stability, more of an identity, and then you can work off that.
Yeah, you like Nick Chubb, I guess. I mean, I think he's a very good back.
I do like Nick Chubb, and I think that his size, his movement, his agility, and his speed sets him up well to be a feature back, a foundation back in this league.
Yeah, boy, I totally agree with you there. Let's move to Baltimore. Listen, you start looking at – I was just talking to Jeff Schwartz, whose brother Mitchell plays for the Chiefs, and Jeff was talking about Lamar Jackson. He said, listen, when they play teams that are good, the Chargers a couple of times – the Browns' defensive front, if you start looking at six or seven Lamar games when he faces elite defenses, he's now struggling in all of them. What did you make of what you saw with Lamar?
I think you're dealing with a quarterback at this point that's still an erratic, inconsistent thrower. He'll make some very good throws, and he'll miss some routine throws. The question is, can that improve to the point where he becomes a consistent thrower? And that's a hard question to answer. He's never been a truly consistent thrower as far as ball placement and precise accuracy, but he will make some unbelievable throws.
Right.
If he's like this, if this is what he is, then what you're working off of is a multidimensional offense that presents major problems with all the run game elements, and you hope then you create defined throws for him to deliver the football. Every game, though, will have third and longs, Colin, as you well know, in which all those run game elements and all those misdirection, deception elements are not a factor, and then you have to make throws. At this point, we're not exactly sure where he stands there. He makes some, he misses others that are routine.
Have you seen in your years of watching tape guys be really average at that and then get much better?
Much better? I'd say probably no. I can't think of anyone just offhand that went from being really inconsistent with their accuracy to being precise with their accuracy, but I think you can improve some.
Okay. Let's go to Carson Wentz, ranked number one by PFF this season. And again, they've got their algorithms or whatever.
Yeah, I don't know exactly what that means, but okay.
I will say this. I've always been a fan of Carson Wentz. So I, of course, you know, confirmation bias, I'm like, darn right they're right.
Exactly.
So I have no problem acknowledging some of this is confirmation bias, but I do like him, and I think you like him too.
I do. I think he's very talented. I think that he misses a few throws here and there, but not to the point where I'd call him inaccurate. You know, I think when you speak to general managers, as I have, that they'll tell you that Wentz, from a pure talent standpoint and a competitive standpoint, is probably in the conversation among the top two or three quarterbacks in the league. I had one GM tell me that Mahomes and Wentz are the two most physically gifted quarterbacks in the league.
I agree with that, yeah.
So I think that he needs to become a little more consistent. I think if they can develop a run game, that will help him. But I think he's the kind of quarterback that can take, I don't want to say average talent, but not big-time receivers, and probably help make them a little bit better. The Eagles are a team that has so many injury concerns, it's sort of hard to get a read on where they are offensively right now. Obviously, they ran the ball extremely well against Green Bay, who chose to play nickel pretty much on every snap versus two tight ends and got burned. But, you know, I think that I'm anxious to see if DeSean Jackson can come back and play and not be injured, where this offense can go.
Let's shift to the Cowboys. So it seems like every time they face the Saints, they struggle to move the football. Dallas certainly did. What did the Saints defense do? Is it just personnel that shut down Dallas?
It was beautiful, schemed beautifully by Dennis Allen, their defensive coordinator. A ton of slanting, a ton of stunting, a lot of run stunts, linebackers hitting the gaps hard and forcing the Dallas offensive line to have to deal with them right as the ball was snapped. They made the Dallas offensive line have to move and think, and they played faster than the Dallas offensive line, and they overmatched the Dallas offensive line. It was very schematic.
Yeah, it really was, wasn't it? I think I was funny. I watched this Rams defense for 3 weekends now, and I think I made a mistake. I think they're better than I thought.
No. You're talking about the Rams?
No, the Saints. The Saints defense is just better. They're just better than I thought.
Yeah, and plus they're a challenging defense. You know, they'll play Tampa Bay this week, and Jameis Winston will face a totally different scenario than he did last week against the Rams, where Wade Phillips essentially, Colin, played soft zone coverage concepts with off-coverage corners, which allowed the receivers to get into their routes freely and easily, and that negated the pass rush, and basically Jameis could hit his back foot and deliver the ball. And I think this week when the Bucs travel to New Orleans, they'll get a defense that will challenge you man-to-man. They'll put Lattimore on Evans as they did a year ago, and they'll challenge the receivers to win, and they'll challenge Winston to make precise throws.
Let's go to Green Bay at Dallas this weekend. Aaron Rodgers probably doesn't have Davante Adams, and I've been saying I don't want to hear about this because, good Lord, you got Brady last year, Edelman's hurt, Gronk's missed Super Bowls, Josh Gordon relapsed, Randy Moss traded midseason. They lost. It doesn't matter. I've seen Russell Wilson lose Doug Baldwin. He's having a great year. But I have this feeling that Davante Adams is really a centerpiece for Aaron Rodgers, and it could be problematic. What does the tape say, Greg?
I would agree with that. And even though we've talked for 5 years about Aaron Rodgers and the fact that he probably plays too much outside of structure, this may be a game where that's required, because I think this Dallas defense is really good. That was kind of overlooked in the game this past week because of what the Saints defense did. But the Dallas defense has been very good all year. They have really good players at all three levels. They're very fast, and I think this might be a game where Rodgers, and he'll know this going in if Adams can't play, I think this is a game where Rodgers will have to make outside of structure plays and improvise and do those kinds of things, which obviously he's more than capable of doing.
Speaking of improvising, Russell Wilson is so different and so unique. I think he got Baker drafted number one, Manziel drafted. I mean, I think he is such an outlier that he's having his best year statistically, you know, and he's doing it. Doug Baldwin left. He's made Will Disley, a blocking tight end in college, productive. Well, what do you – it's hard. We're in his eighth year, and Pete Carroll said 2 days ago, he's like, this is the best I've ever seen him play in year eight. Talk about what you've seen so far from Russell, who plays
tonight. Well, they're a fascinating team because there's no mystery to what they do. They line up, they run the ball, and then they have Russell Wilson work off that. And it's a very efficient offense, and Wilson then adds the element of movement and the element of making second reaction improvisational plays. But their pass game is not particularly detailed or nuanced. It's fairly basic stuff. They run almost an old school offense, and Wilson executes it very, very well.
Yeah, I'm watching the highlights. He's so much fun to watch. By the way, before I get to our big play with the Rams and Jared Goff, I predicted before the season, and I was wrong on this. I said Kirk Cousins, second year in the offense, it's gonna get better. My eyes are telling me he's getting more anxious. He's clenching his teeth more. He won't pull the trigger. Is this getting worse, or is it a scheme thing? Is Zimmer conservative? What is happening to Kirk Cousins?
You know, I'm not sure that it's necessarily getting worse. I think Cousins is a certain kind of quarterback, and there's not a lot of mystery to what he is. I think he's a complementary piece that needs a full complement run game. He needs a good defense, and when one or the other of those things does not work, he can struggle. He'll probably end the season with the same kinds of numbers he's always had, but when all's said and done, he's probably a mid-range quarterback who needs other things to work for him. And when you go into Chicago against a really, really good front, even without Roquan Smith, and you cannot run the ball at all, those are the kinds of games in which Kirk Cousins will struggle. And I think Mike Zimmer wants to play a certain kind of game, and those games can get you so far, and then you have to win games with your quarterback making throws. And Cousins may not be the kind of guy that can step up to that level in which he has to be the one to make the throws.
That's
but
fair.
I don't think there's a mystery to that, Colin. I don't think this is news.
Okay. Finally, Rams offensive line's not playing as well. They let a couple guys go. Todd Gurley doesn't have the juice. Defense fell apart. You have your big play of the week is the Rams, who played tonight on Fox on the road against Seattle. So let's talk about this.
Well, I just want, before we run it, I just want to say that even though the Bucks' defensive numbers in the pass game are probably not very good, skewed certainly by this past week, this is a fun defense to watch under Todd Bowles. They do an awful lot of things, and they challenge an offense with a lot of different tactics. So let's run the play. I'm sure a lot of people remember this play with Lavonte David making this interception, dropping out and making this interception of Jared Goff, and Jared Goff clearly did not see him and did not account for him at all. Yeah. But there was a reason for that. It was such a nice scheme. Because what you're going to see is Lavonte David up on the line of scrimmage as part of a five-man defensive front. So he looks like a pass rusher. There's Jordan Whitehead. He's going to blitz. Okay, so what happens now? Well, here's what Goff wants here on this third and four. He wants to hit Gerald Everett split out to the field on a slant route. That's where he wants to go with the ball. So now what happens? Well, first of all, they're going to send Woods in motion across the formation with the corner going with him. So now you get the blitz. So what does Goff see? That whole area is now open. You can see that clearly. That whole area will be open for Jared Goff to throw the slant to Everett. He thinks this is pitch and catch right now. Easy throw. But now we need to go back to Lavonte David. He was on the line of scrimmage. He drops out underneath that. Goff did not account for him at all. This is schemed defense. Now, you don't know 100% that a slant is coming, but it's third and four, so you're going to get a rhythmic throw, and that's what you get here.
Oh, boy, you're right on that. I can't see that linebacker either on that throw.
No, that's really good design, and Todd Bowles has done a really good job with this deep. By the way, right now, they lead the NFL in rush defense, and over the last 3 weeks, they've played Todd Gurley, Saquon Barkley, and Christian McCaffrey, and they're the number one rushing defense in the league.
Yeah, well, Todd Bowles is the classic great coordinator. Wade Phillips is this. Not sure he's got the personality to own the room, but as a coordinator, Jets defense was good. Buccaneers defense is now good. How about that? That is a great play. I didn't see him either. Greg Cosell, 40 years NFL Films. Thanks for coming on, boss. We appreciate it.
Appreciate it, Colin. Thank you.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
So I was looking over the NFL schedule this weekend, and typical of the NFL, there's seven or eight games that are really interesting. Rams-Seattle tonight's fascinating. Monday Night Football, Baker Mayfield at San Francisco, Jimmy G. I think Green Bay at Dallas on Fox is outstanding. New England's going to Washington. I always watch the Patriots. Baltimore-Pittsburgh to me is must-watch. I think Minnesota bounces back against the Giants. Here's an interesting game. Khalil Mack of the Chicago Bears, the former Raider, will now play the Raiders. This game is in London, part of the Raiders' goofy schedule that the NFL apologized for. It was so difficult. They won't go home again until November 3rd. It's absurd. They had a preseason game in Winnipeg. So anyway, Khalil Mack said he can now he circled this game on the schedule.
I've been looking forward to this. This is one I've been looking forward to. Man, I can't lie to you, man. I gotta let you go out of here. You know what I'm saying? It's gonna be a big one.
I got to give the Raiders credit. I've been very critical of John Gruden. Who I know and I like. I think he's a great broadcaster, and I think his departure from Monday Night Football, the absence has been noticeable. This has been a tire fire. You have the cryo feet disaster with AB, the AB disaster. You have a first-time general manager in his first draft. You had the Hard Knocks distraction. You had the Vontaze Burfict mess. You've had weird trades. And yet the Raiders today would be a playoff team. It's incredible. The offense is mostly good. Their rookie running back has 300 yards. They stole Darren Waller, the tight end from Baltimore. He has been spectacular. Tyrell Williams, the receiver from the Chargers, has a touchdown in every game. They've been clever and creative, and they come right out of the gate every week. Despite the noise and the press conferences and the silliness and the trades and the controversies, the Raiders are actually a pretty fun watch. They are not a great team. And when you consider they're in a division with Mahomes and Andy Reid and the Chargers and the fact today they'd be a playoff team with this schedule, this noise. By the way, if you think I'm exaggerating about the schedule, starting at Minnesota, September 22nd, they don't play at home until November. at Minnesota, at Indy, now in London, bye at Green Bay, at Houston. Those are some really good defenses. And yet today they're 2-2 and a fun watch. You know, what are expectations? You know, in life, what are expectations? This has been a barnyard musical for 6 months, a total on the side of the freeway tire fire. And, you know, they're just a slight underdog against Chicago, won their division in Chicago last year. Some dysfunctional people can work. And I said, if the Raiders got to 8-8, you would be like, oh, this is an incredible success. And I'm dead serious. This would be an incredible success. If the Raiders get to 500, I will buy 2 season tickets for the Raiders in Vegas, give them to a charity, a kids charity. That is how impressed I am. Now, this may go sideways fast. But to be 2-2 in that division with all the noise, I can't deal with that kind of chaos. I can't deal with it. Their new stadium, you know, remember Al Davis, the late Al Davis? His whole thing was just win, baby. They should hang a banner inside the new Vegas football stadium that says just 500, baby. And it will be one of their great accomplishments. If they beat Chicago and London, I don't even know what to make of it. I don't even know what to make of it. The spread on this game, if you'd have told me, watch the Bears in preseason and watch the Raiders just organizationally, this should be an 18-point spread. Now, Chicago is using a backup quarterback, although Chase Daniels, a very good backup, has played with Matt Nagy before in Kansas City. So, 2 season tickets. I'll buy them. Go to a charity in Vegas because didn't I call this team a 3-13 or a 4-12 team? I thought they would be the biggest joke in the league. I thought it would be Miami's tanking, then the Raiders. Just 500, baby. What an accomplishment.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app. Ready to make some sweet cash? Colin's going to give you his 3 sure bets for the college football weekend. It's time for the Fox Bet Marquee 3. Iowa at Michigan.
I'm going to take Michigan to win and cover the spread at -3.5. Listen, Michigan was favored in this game by 14 points in the summer. Because they lost to Wisconsin, they're 11 points less of a team. No, Wisconsin's fantastic. Wisconsin's defense is the best I've ever seen. Michigan has won 10 straight home games. They're the much better team here. And oh, by the way, Iowa, oh my gosh, Iowa's undefeated. They've yet to face a team this season that has a current winning record. They have faced the 4th easiest schedule in America among the 18 remaining unbeaten teams. Iowa's also lost 3 straight games against ranked Big Ten teams. Michigan's the better team. This is an easy number to cover. Michigan wins it 26-20 over Iowa. They're the better team here.
Auburn at Florida.
I'm going to take Auburn has dominated this series. I'm going to take the Tigers, Auburn Tigers, -2.5, even though it's at Florida. Auburn has won the last 3 meetings. Auburn's defensive line, I believe, is one of the best in America and will push Florida's offensive line around. Auburn's the only team in the country with 2 wins over teams that are currently ranked, Oregon and Texas A&M. And by the way, in the last 3 games, Auburn's offense has exploded. In fact, Bo Nix had a bad first half against Oregon. Since halftime of the opening game, the freshman quarterback, Bo Nix, 9 touchdowns, no turnovers. They've not only won, they're 5-0 against the spread. Auburn has faced better competition. Over the course of the game, this Auburn defensive line pushes around the Gators and wins 27-20.
Texas at West Virginia.
Texas is the better team, but I'm going to take West Virginia and the points +10.5. West Virginia, strangely, has given Texas all sorts of trouble. They run the heck out of the football and will keep it away from Texas quarterback Sam Ellinger. By the way, West Virginia had a bye last week. Now, I know Texas did too, but who is Texas playing next week? Oklahoma. Texas has lost the game before the Sooners in three of the last five seasons. So all those Texas players are looking ahead on the horizon to Oklahoma. And here's West Virginia at home getting over 10 points with that's had kind of the number on Texas. They run the football. Sam Ellinger sits on the sidelines and watches too much of this game. I'm going to take Texas to win 30-20. But it's just, I'm betting a number here. I'm taking double-digit favorite, a double-digit underdog with West Virginia. So there's my picks. You can look at them one more time. I think Michigan is absolutely a better team than Iowa and wins by more than 3.5. I think Auburn's defensive line is the difference. They've dominated this series. They're actually really playing well after a crappy first half against Oregon. And Texas will beat West Virginia, but I'm going to bet a number here. I'll take 10.5 with West Virginia at home. They had a bye. They'll play well. This is, for West Virginia, that's as big as a game gets. That is a big game. For Texas, yeah, looking at Sooner helmets out in the distance.
That's really interesting.
Lou Holt said this years ago. He goes, you never get the same 19-year-old back-to-back weeks. You never do. He goes, they got midterms, they got girlfriends, they're young, they're emotional. That's why, by the way, you know, Notre Dame plays Georgia, then they come out against Virginia, and they're totally flat in the first half. You know, NFL guys, you can get the same. I mean, you get New England's the same team every week. College teams, you get wild variations because it's 18 and 19 year old
right.
kids. So Texas plays like crud before Oklahoma. Just the way it works, right? So
it makes sense.
Yeah, it does.